Today's daf is daf kuf samachet in Baba Basra, last parak, paraget pashut. And we're holding by the two dots, about one-fourth of the way down. The habaal notain sachar. Now we're talking about over here, we've moved on in the Mishnah now to the get of an isha, and we're talking about who pays for the sofer. So we spoke about other dinim of shtar until now, the writing of the shtar. Now the question is the payment for the shtar. So here it says the baal is notain sachar, which is a little bit strange, because usually it's the one who is making the kinyan that pays the sachar. And the one who's making the kinyan, of course, is konat atzma, is the woman. So she's going out to freedom, so to speak. So why should the baal pay the sachar? Because the Yom HaKrov, vikatav v'natan. So vikatav v'natan puts now the responsibility of the ketiva and the netina of the get on the baal. And that's how the Torah views the nature of getin. So why, says the Gemara, nowadays do we not do it that way? And instead, our minhag is that the woman gives the sachar. V'aidna, the lo avdinan hachi, shadyua rabbanan aisha kehecha de lo l'shay. Having recognized the reality of a baal's reluctance to give a get and relinquish control and always using something or another as an excuse, so the chachomim indeed said, okay, you know what, let the woman pay for the get, in order that shouldn't serve as an excuse for the delay of a get. Now the question is, how important is this takana in terms of its mechanism? Is if we understand the meaning of the katav natan to be a definition of what the get is, then it shouldn't be a kosher get if somebody else pays for it. Because then it's not the katav. Since she's paying for it, it's as if she was the one who was the katav. So then it should be a possible get. So there are some Rishonim who hold that this is a takana of Hefker Bez than Hefker. The Darbonin are mafkir her money, take it away from her, and give it as the Baal's money. Because otherwise it wouldn't be a kosher get. Others view the issue of who pays as being really irrelevant to the din of a katav natan. It's just that since the original way in which we do a get is that the Baal is the katav natan, so it makes sense that it's his responsibility. So he pays for it. But if we say somebody else should pay for it, we don't have to actually give over the money to the Baal. Okay, so it's a question of how to understand that original limud from the pasuk.
According to the first way, is there a problem of mechayev? You can't be
zayich to someone achiyev. No, the tefkir bezin can do whatever they want. Kotvim shtar lelove afal pi she'ein malve imo. Says the Gemara. Well, I mean, obviously, the one who wants the contract is the love. Why shouldn't he pay for it? We just obviously brought the first part, and not the second part, which is what we're interested in. We're going to have a series now of discussions about who's paying. Now, the first part is only there to remember which star we're talking about. But the main information is the one who's notain. So, all of a sudden again. Where did that come from? So says the Gemara, if the borrower is the guy who wants the contract, he's going now to order the contract, of course he's going to pay for the contract. Who else is supposed to pay for the contract? I don't understand. Says the Gemara, the Kiddush of the Mishnah is that even where there's an iska, so where there's an iska, remember the way that we create an iska is that it's part loan, part investment, and we do it that way in order to share the risks. So you might think that in that case, the person who is the investor, so he is now a beneficiary as much as the borrower is. So even though the borrower is, it's constructed as if it's a loan, but in reality, it's part of a broader relationship. So maybe now the one who wants to invest his money is the one who's considered to be the beneficiary. Gamash Malan, it's always the taker of the money who's the beneficiary. It's a very good thing for VCs to know, which they do. Venture capitalists. Kotvim shtar lemocher, af al pi she'ein lokeach imo. Now, the next case that we had is that the buyer of a property pays for the contract of the sale of the property. Says the word, isn't that obvious? I mean, he wants to buy it, so he wants to pay for the raya of the buying. I don't get it. Pshita. Lo tzricha b'molcher sadeo mipnei ra'ata. It's talking about over here that this guy's been desperate to get to unload a property, and he finally finds a sucker to buy it. So you might think that over there, we're going to spend on the market a certain amount of time, that we could be b'chai of the seller. Kamash Malan, that always we view as the person who's relinquishing property as the loser, and the person who is getting property as the winner. The next case that we add in the Mishnah is that the Chatan pays for the writing of the Shtari Psikta, which is Shtari Erisin. And we explain that was Shtari Psikta, in which each one of the sides is committing to how much money they're going to be putting into the marriage for their children. כמה אתה נותן לבנך, כך וכך, כמה אתה נותן לביתך, כך וכך. And the chosen pays for the money. It pays for the contract. Says the Gemara, well, obviously, the chosen is the one who's walking off with the loot. I mean, why wouldn't he pay for the contract? Says the Gemara, because we're talking about when the chosen's from Lakewood. So if the chosen is from Lakewood, obviously, I mean, you got to pay through the nose to get a chosen from Lakewood, right? So Mimela, you would think that even though you're the one who's giving all the money, he's giving you the great deal. That's certainly what they think power is. So Kamash Malan, Rafa Pekin, the chosen's got to pay just to put him in his place. So what's the chiddush over here? The chiddush is that even where Afilu Tzurbe Mirabbanim, where over here the chosen is now a Talmud Chacham, the Nechalei Lechamu Ale Kruveis. Now the father-in-law wants that chosen. So he wants the chosen. So part of buying the chosen is paying for the shtar psikta. No, the chosen has to pay for the shtar psikta. In kotvim shtar erusut v'kablanut, and without the presence of both, and in the end, it's the oris that is going to have to pay for the shtar that allows him to become a sharecropper. Says the Gemara, that's also pshita. No, I mean he's the one that is interested in getting involved in the business. Lo tzricha bivora. It's talking about over here that it's a type of property that needs to be now staggered. In other words, 1 year you mover it, the other year you plant it. And you're writing this shtar in the year that he's not going to be able to do anything with it anyway. So now you're, in other words, you're setting up an arisut that's not really going to benefit the oris until next year, because he can't plant this year. So you might think in that case, the person who is giving out the land with this contract is the beneficiary. Kamash Malan, it's always viewed as the oris. Now, we don't know what that is. It sounds like shtarei berurin is maybe some type of arbitration document, but then what kind of shtar would it be? So what do you mean when you say shtarei berurin? Now, what's interesting is that the word berurin can have two meanings. Because berur means to clarify, based on bar as the shoresh. But berurin can also mean selection, based on borar, right? So which one is it over here? For the truth is, it's really both. I mean, there's different shittas that are going to explain different elements of shtarei berurin. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Rava, Hachatargimu here in Bavel, they say shtarei berurin is where each one is mevarer his tanot. It's sort of like a deposition. Before we go into court, we want to have exactly the facts of the case, because afterwards you're going to adjust what you're saying based on how you see the case going. That we don't have patience for that. Because you're not allowed to change your taina anyway. We don't want to have to sit and argue about it. So sit down first, write out a clear-cut definition of what it is that you're going to be tining, and we're going to be basing the case on these original shtarot. Rav Yirmiyahu bar Rava says it's a shtar of zavla. Zeborer lo echad. Zeborer lo echad. Since the din is that you can be borer a particular dayan, the other person can be borer a dayan for himself, and then those two dayanim, as we'll see in Sanhedrin, or Bayer Lahem, a third, you have a right to change your mind until you sign the Shtar Beirurin. But once the Shtar Beirurin, so it really is, in a sense, arbitration, like we thought, except it's not the psak of the arbitration. In other words, in essence, wherever you're going to be Borer Lo Echad, so you're saying, I'm saying Echanim, or whatever he says is good. So this is the way in which we form the Beit Din. So when you write that down, it really is similar to the arbitration document that we have today. Meaning, where once I'm Mechayev myself, this is binding arbitration. So in a binding arbitration document, I'm going to say, okay, I'm a Kabbal so-and-so, and together with your Kabbal of your so-and-so, and they'll select somebody else. And whatever they say goes. So that really is what it boils down to. It is Zavla. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel omer, lishnehem kotvim, shnayim, lezeh v'atzmo, lezeh v'atzmo. That actually, we give each one of them a copy of this contract. Now, what's the machlokas? I mean, why is one need the contract more than the other? I mean, each one is coming now to be borer their tainas or to be borer their dayan. So what would be the machlokas between Rav Shimon ben Gamliel and the Tana Kamma? That Rav Shimon ben Gamliel holds, they have a right to demand a separate contract. I don't want to pay half. I'll pay the whole thing for my own contract. I want my copy. What's the machlokas? L'chaira, very interesting machlokas. Whether kofin al midat sedom? Over here, a guy says, I don't want to pay half so that we share a kind. I don't like sharing. Oh, so where are you from? Sodom. Me, you don't like sharing. We'll force you to share. The court's going to issue a document and it's going to bill you. Whereas Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, no. If the guy says, I don't want to share the costs, I'd rather pay my own costs and have my own contract. Sounds like Sodom. So according to him, it doesn't matter. If a guy wants to act like that, we can't force him to share. Now this machlokas is found in every family. Always there's some kids who refuse to share. The question is, can we be kafe for you to share? How beneficial is it to be kafe for the child to share? Does that teach him sharing, or does that teach him to be more makpid on midas sedayim? Okay, so that's lechayim dependent in this machlokas, if there is such a machlokas. Says the Gemara, no.
Which midas sedayim? Zenden as a
lechasar? Yeah, I don't want to do something that you get benefit out of. What does it cost you? It saves you money. Doesn't matter. I don't like to be involved with other people. I'd rather pay for it myself. Korah, this is the question. So leimah bekofen al midat stom kamiflagei. The Marsa bar Kofim said, the Tanakama hold, look, a guy can't say, I want to pay all the costs. Because in doing so, he's forcing the other guy to pay all the costs for his cup. He's got to learn to share, little boy. What is Reb Shimon ben Gamliel saying? Marsa bar in Kofim? If little boy doesn't want to share, we can't force him to share. Says the word, no. It could be that if that were the issue, everybody would be made that you can force Midas Sedom. So the Kulei Alma Kofim, the reason that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel holds that in this case it's not considered to be Midas Sedom is because he has a right to say that Lo Nechali, that the Avi Zechutcha Gabi Zechuti, the Damita Aloi Ki Arya Arva. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, you are a lion, a danger, constantly sitting in wait for me. I don't want to have anything to do with you. I don't want you to have a copy of what I sign. Every time you get involved, it's another fight. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear from you. Goodbye. And therefore, I insist you pay for your own contract. I will not share documents with you.
Dr.
Misha para miktzat chovo. Now here we have an interesting situation. You remember there's a machlokas bekal, whether kotvin shover or not. Can you force a guy to accept a receipt, or can you say, I don't pay money until I get the shtar back? Okay. Whether the case, therefore, here is that you can't force, they agreed that we don't want to go through the expense of running a shover. A guy's paying up, let's say, half of a loan. So he says, I want the shtar back. The guy says, I'm not going to give you the shtar back, but you pay me the rest. He says, okay, so let's put it into escrow. So you go, you put the shtar into escrow. You tell the escrow holder, he shlish et shtaro, that's what we use the word for escrow, is he shlish, give it into a third party. You know, Marlo, you tell the escrow holder that if the rest of the money does not arrive by the end of the month, then return the shtar to the lender, which is, of course, a disaster for you because it means the lender can come after you with the whole thing because there's no receipt. So basically, you've made a commitment on the basis of your being certain that you have money coming into the bank and it won't be a problem. Unfortunately, at the end of the month, the money's not there, which is as usual the case. Oi. So what do you do? So you told the guy, Im lo natati mikan va'ad yofloni, ten lo shtaro. Higi azman v'lo natan. Now it's the end of the month, the money's not in. What is the escrow holder supposed to do with the shtar? Rabbi Yossi Omer, he should give the shtar to the lender. The guy said to do it. He was ready to take the risk, so too bad on him. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo yitein. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, obviously he only said that, believing that it was going to be something that could never happen. So isn't that an umdana that you shouldn't give it to him? But Maika Miflagei asks the Gemara, what is this machlok is based on? It's based on the classic issue of whether an esmachta is kanya. So Rabbi Yehuda Sovar esmachta kanya. You promise something based on a belief that it will never come to be. So the question is the whole point of the promise that I take into consideration the absurdity of this situation and I say, you know what? If things really get to such a pass, this is really what I would do. Or are you saying, I would do such a thing if it would come to pass, but since obviously it can't come to pass, I'm just showing you the level of how absurd it is, in which case it's an umdana that I didn't mean to pay. So then that's would mean that, like anything else, where we know that something means something other than what's being said, which we've seen many examples of, a man makes his wife the sole heir of everything that he has. We understand what that means. It means that she's an apotropos, and so on. So we've had many cases. So here, too, in general, an esmachta is viewed as an unreasonable. I mean, here the shalish is saying, so what about the $2 million he paid you last week? Look, he said if it isn't in by the end of the week, I get a right to pay it, to take it again. Oh, come on. I mean, I certainly am. To everybody, that's a little weird. No, That should be the machlokis of your rebutus of resmachta lo kan. Om Reb Nachman, Om Rav Abua, Bar Ravua, Om Rav, halachik Reb Yosi, that resmachta is kanya. Ki otu lekami to Reb Yami. When such a case would come to Reb Ami, and the guy would say to Reb Ami, oh, come on, I mean, you don't really think I meant to pay another $2 million just because somebody was late with the check in the bank, do you? Reb Ami would say, what am I supposed to do? The fact is, I really do agree with you. I think this is outrageous. But Reb Yochanan has taught us on countless occasions that halachic Reb Yossi, so where is my Rebbe? What am I supposed to do? Ani Maya say, I'm going to have to go ahead and utilize the clause, the penalty clause, even though it's clear it's an Ismachta. He says Ismachta is Kanya. Lamaisa says the Gemara, that's not how we pass it. The in halachic Reb Yossi. It's viewed that an unreasonable penalty clause is put in there only to indicate the absurdity of the situation. And like in real life today, it's going to be very hard to enforce most penalty clauses. Exactly for this reason. None of this is no gain. You know, I don't know why everybody's asking this now. This is a question that you're asking why they were mashlish, not why they have an esmachta. There's no relationship between the esmachta and the hashlasha. We opened up the case with an escrow. Why they made an escrow in reality was because they were being chased with a flying saucer, obviously. That said that if you dare rewrite the contract, we take you up and we tear you to pieces. What do I care why they made an escrow? I'm only being nice in responding.
Why do we say the guy chose God to take a receipt? Therefore, he has obligation on himself.
No, it's not what we're talking about. I don't care why it happened. We're just using this as an opening to penalty clauses. So we don't want to talk about the court. We want to talk about me and you. You're holding somebody else's contract. What do you do? A guy tells you openly, give it back to him if I don't pay. So then the time comes, you think, well, I should really give it back to him? It cost him $2 million because he's calling me. He's saying, I didn't really mean it, of course. The check's only one day late. Don't give it back today. But you said to give it back. Oh, come on, you know, I didn't mean to give it back. So this is a real-life situation. So what do you do? But how we got into this situation is not our problem here. It's above the Metzia issue. It's not above the Batra. I never believed the builder that the house is going to be ready for Pesach. He swears it's going to be ready for Pesach. I said, okay, if it's not ready for Pesach, I get the house for free. Absolutely. Remember, this month is not magic. It comes under the general rubric of Umdana. The question is, how do we read this Umdana? If it's a sufficient umdana for us to say that the way it's constructed couldn't have been meant, so then there'd be nothing to talk about. Nobody would hold that such an esmachta would be kind. Okay, the question is whether this is the kind of things that people would write based on a risk-taking commitment, then, but we know that they only entered into that kind of crazy risk-taking because they didn't think it would happen. Like, fine, you didn't think it would happen, and it did happen. But that's what it meant, that you were willing to take that into consideration. Now we have another problem. We've been talking until now where we have a shtar, we need to write a shtar, all of the issues of preventing now forgery and so on. What happens if a document is erased? Falls into the washing machine, goes through the wash, you take it out, and now you just lost your loan document. What do you do? So, I mean, what we could do, obviously, I mean, we could say that we have witnesses. Let's just call in the witnesses of the loan. That is not going to help you one little tiny bit. Because if you get witnesses to the loan, you don't have a shtar. And remember, the issue may not be that you want to get your money back. The guy's ready to pay you. Problem is, he doesn't have any money. But he has property that he sold last week that's worth all of the loan. So if you had a shtar, you'd be able to simply go and be tofes that karka. Now you don't have a shtar. Just think, well, what do I need a shtar for? I have witnesses. Witnesses don't address the problem of taking from the chasim mishubadim. Can you recreate a shtar? That is a problem. So what you could do is ma'amid alav edim. You bring now witnesses into court, and they say that they know, they saw that there was such a shtar that had such an amount in it and such a time signed by so-and-so, and they come to Bezdin, and then osim lo kiyum, Bezdin writes a kiyum of the shtar that was. Ish ploni ben ploni, nimchak shtaro biyom ploni. So-and-so had a shtar that was erased on such and such a date, that had originally now been dated at such and such a time, that had originally had Ploni or Ploni signed on it, and now we sign in Bezdin, the three people in the Bezdin sign on that, which now becomes the court's document, so that the original shtar now exists as a Maise Bezdin. The question is, of course, I mean, where did the kiyum of the witnesses' signatures come from? That the Gemara is going to discuss. When you say that there should be a kiyum in this case, what exactly would the special henpik of an erased star, what would it say? Ezeo kiyumo. How do you write the kibbutz? Normally, the star is there, and then the Bezdin stamps it that we've authenticated these signatures. But you can't authenticate the signatures, you only have a testimony that there were such signatures. So now what are you going to do? So ezeo kiyum. Well, you write the following nusa, okay? B'mot of Tlata Avina, the following three people were in a Beit Din that was officially constituted, Anu, Ploni, Uploni, Uploni. And now, in front of us, Hotzi Ploni ben Ploni, Shtar Machuk, a certain gentleman brought a contract that had been erased, Lifanenu, Beyon Ploni, Uploni, Uploni Eidav. Now, it could end with the words, in Katuvbo, Huskaknu le'edutan shel Eidim, so then he would be gove with that. So if the henpek ends with the words, and we identified the original witnesses and found them after cross-examining them in court to have been giving over accurate testimony as to the events, so then you no longer need to contest the question of whether this is an accurate loan. But if not, you're going to have to bring witnesses to the fact that the loan took place as stated in the shtar. Now, this is a remarkable idea, because it's the only place that we separate clearly. It's a laboratory situation in which you can separate between the value of the testimony of the loan and the fact of there being a recorded document of the loan. So remember, we have two completely different issues in every shtar. One is the fact that it serves as a record of what took place, that such and such a debt exists, which could have been done by verbal testimony of a witness as well. But the further issue of a shtar is that it also serves as the recording of a lien by creating a kol, which allows you to go after a buyer that bought after the time that you lent the money. Here we have a weird situation. We don't have a valid shtar in terms of its testimony. So therefore, the fact that somebody says there was such a shtar is hearsay testimony. So it doesn't serve the purpose of what was written in the shtar. There was never a takana that witnesses that saw somebody who saw something can report on what they heard from the other witnesses to Bezdin and write that in a shtar. That's ridiculous. That's the ultimate mipian velo mipik tavam. You can't write a shtar like that. All that you could do is you could recreate the document. What the document does is create a lien. So you want to say that you are witnesses to the fact that a lien existed. Fine. But as we've already seen in other contexts, this is so abstract and so subtle and so perfectly balanced that we've seen it in so many different contexts and it's still hard to grasp. In the same way that somebody could sell you an instrument of a loan. So the din is that you can still cancel the loan, even though the other guy bought the loan from you. Because he can't buy the loan, he can only buy the lien by buying the document. But in order to exercise the lien, you have to prove that there was a loan. If the guy who made the loan says, well, I don't care about getting the money back, so then how are you going to collect? The lien was in order to collect the guy's loan. Too bad. The same thing is true over here. You prove there's a shtar. Okay, so what does that show? That shows that there are witnesses that say that there was a lien against this property, and therefore, if I can prove that a debt existed, I can exercise this lien. Okay, now prove that the debt existed. What do you mean? The witnesses saw that it said in the contract that a debt existed. That's hearsay testimony. What do you mean hearsay? All they saw was that there was a document creating a lien to that effect. The other thing that's in the contract is the facts of the testimony. Can they be made to the fact of the testimony? No. So therefore, they have proven that there's a lien, and we recreate the lien. So here the Bezdin recreates the lien document. Here you are, sir. This was the document that you had that allowed you to collect. With these new agents.
What's the effective date? Of the reestablishment date of the
date? No, of course not. The original date. We know that there was a lien on that date. What? Of course I know about it for the first one. What other people? I don't need to have a shtar in order to continually create a kol. There's no continual creation of a kol. There's the original shtar. So I know that there was a lien from such and such a date against such and such a field. Thank you very much, Bezdin. So I want my money. What money? The money that the guy owes me. Have you proved to us that the guy owes you money? What do you mean I have a lien to collect money that he owes me? That's only if he owes you money. Now prove that he owes you money. Then you can use your lien to collect the money. Therefore, if the Beis Din writes as part of this whole research that not only did we reconstitute the document, but we also investigated the Eidim, called them into court, cross-examined them because there was no document that would stand ki'ilu nechkar aidutan bebeidin, so we need to go through the whole cross-examination like we would on verbal testimony. And we established that a loan exists. The original loan. Okay, but if a loan exists, it doesn't mean you can collect it from the chassid b'shubodim. I sold this property. There's a whole different case here, however. That happens to be in the same piece of paper, but it's two totally different issues. So if I include in the kiyum, and by the way, we identified the original witnesses, called them into court, re-examined, and found that what they said was indeed true. If not, if that doesn't write it, so then the holder of the lien is going to have to find new witnesses to prove that the loan existed. Even if the original witnesses show up to court, but they can't stand up now to cross-examination, because the guy says, look, it's been 15 years. I mean, I don't remember exactly. Oh, you don't remember exactly? Fine. Thank you, sir. Well, how am I supposed to? Nobody's blaming you. It's not a moral issue. Thank you very much. We don't have witnesses. But I had written up a shtar. Well, we don't have that shtar. It was erased. So the guy says, now what do I do? Find somebody who does remember that can stand up in court to cross-examination. We certainly can't accept hearsay testimony. It's a fabulously clear and powerful way of understanding the issues in a shtar.
The shtar is not, it's not like Eidos. It's just saying over what...
That's what we spoke about before that Tosis points out. A shtar is not really Eidos.
So
it's
then
a post-Eidos takana that a debt exists.
So why can't we establish from the shtar...
Because I can't say that I saw the result of the testimony of another person. I have to be the primary testifier. I can only testify that I saw a lien against the property recorded in the title company. Fine, that has nothing to do with testimony. You're testifying that a lien exists against this property. That's perfectly reasonable. On that level, you're not hearsay. You saw the lien. It happens to be that the lien, in Jewish terms, takes the form of testimony by somebody in a document that such a thing happened. But that's a completely different issue about then whether the thing happened.
Why can't the original lien or the document testify both? Yes, there was a deal.
They can.
There was a shtar. They could testify both things. But looking at it the other way around, if we have the second group, the later group can testify, oh, there was a document, but they can't testify exactly.
No, they have to. It's not enough to say there was a document. Because I need to know that that document was given over, that it was held. Let's have somebody say that this document not only existed, but was erased. If the document doesn't have testimony that it was erased, we're never going to reissue a document. That's all we need. The guy will pay back the loan, and then 2 weeks later, the guy comes, here's my loan. Huh?
I lost it.
That we're going to get to. We'll never reissue a document. If you lose your shtar, that's your problem. We're not going to reissue it for you. It's because it went through the washing machine. And these witnesses say, we saw that, and this was the contract that went through the washing machine. That's why we're writing. It has to be brought in front of us.
We saw it erased.
That's the point. And it was. This is the event. This is the event that happened that there's testimony to. Otherwise, anybody can come in to bring a blank piece of paper and say, gee, it went through the washing machine. Now give me a copy. Great. We'll see later on that is what they would do, obviously. It's exactly what the case is. You laugh. These are serious issues. The Gemara is going to address that. Okay, so that's now the girsa of the henpek. Now, if a shtar was ripped up, then it's possible. But if it got torn, then it's kosher. Now, obviously, the difference nitkareha means passive. It happened to it. Nikra means somebody did it to it. Right? Now, how do we know? That the Gemara will ask. How do we know? Nimchak or nitashtesh. Now, if it went through the washing machine, but it's still readable, or maybe the ink spread. Look, if you can make it out, and we shumo nikar, it's still kosher. The problem was where you can't make it out. Okay. Now, hechidami nikra and hechidami nitkarea. How do we know whether a shtar was voided by tearing it up, or whether the doggy ate it? Amar of Yehuda. Well, the way to know is that it's a kera shel beidin. I mean, that's. But if it's nikra, meaning a kera shel beidin, then it's nikra. Somebody did that. If it was nitkarea, then it's randomly a kera sheina shel beidin. If he domi kera shel beidin. There's a number of different issues. Okay, so first of all, Amar of Yehuda. Well, first of all, a Beis Din will go for the information in the shtar rather than the writing in the shtar. Because remember, 80% of the writing of the shtar is legalese babble. That is the same in every shtar. And we don't need to tear that, because it doesn't have any meaning. That's the tofis. The only part that we have to tear, if it's a bezdin tear, is to go straight for the jugular, meaning the information itself, which would be the makom edim, the makom hazman, and the makom hatoref, the specific details of what the amount was, where the edim are signed, where the date is, and that's torn. Question whether they all three need to be, okay, that is a machlokas. Abaya says, well, there's another indication. They're not arguing, by the way. There's another indication. A bezdin will tear shiti ve'erev. It's going to tear like a cross. In other words, it'll tear both directions to indicate that this was torn up to be useless. Not that it just has a straight tear through something. So, exactly. Right. So it has to be shiti ve'erev. Now, there were these Arabs. There were these Arabs that were going around forcing people to write a contract out on the fields that they owned and taking the original documents of the ownership to the field from them so that they could never go back to court to prove that these were their fields when finally Wyatt Earp comes to town and justice will be served. So the owners of the next town in line out there in the west, they come to Kame de Abaya and they know them outlaws are on their way. So they come to Abaya's Bezdin and they say, look, we know what these guys do. So what we want is a copy. So we want to bring you the original document, the Bezdin. Have you testify then with a Bezdin document that there was such a shtar, that we own this property. And then when they come and we hand over all of our documents to these guys, stick them up, partner. We hand over the documents. When they finally get them out of town, we're able to go back to you and take the copy that was filed in the court, and then we can prove that indeed these were our sadot original. So they say to Abaya, Lichze mar shtarim, v'lichtov lan mar shtara achrina, you write a copy of the shtar, that way, imitnas chad, nakina chad biyadan. If anything happens to the original, and it's going to happen, then we'll have a copy. Amar lahu, so Abaya said, it's a great idea. There's only one problem. A court cannot issue a copy. Because in writing a copy, you're giving the potential for a recollection. What? It's just a riot? No, it's not just a riot. Because let's imagine a situation like this. A guy owns a piece of property. Little do we know that he also took out a lot of loans against this property. Okay, we don't know about that. He goes and he sells this property. So now, we have somebody that has a document that so-and-so sold him property. Somebody comes now and collects the property against the loans. Aha! Uh-huh. Now the sale document serves as the basis of a suit against the seller to recapture the money that I paid for it. Right? That's the standard case. Sales of property contain insurance against a title violation by somebody who had a lien. That's the definition of a sale. To the point of Achrayut, is even a Taut Sofer. So now, these guys are coming into Abaya's court. Says Abaya, what's to prevent you, smart Alex, from being the supposed victims of the scam of these people who are taking away the documents, coming into my court and asking for a copy to be issued in order to protect your rights, when in reality, you know that the people that sold you the property had liens against the property, and that you are going to be suing them for the value of the property when the debtor comes to collect. Then you will take out the copy, and you will say, you owe us $2 million, which we gave you for the property which was not taken away. The guy says, what are you talking about? I paid you the $2 million. We tore up that contract. Really? That's interesting, because here it is. So you using good old Abaya's court in order to sue a guy illegally. Now how can I get... So, I mean, it's a good sob story, but the court cannot be part of something that could end up being a suit that is completely fraudulent. There's nothing I can do for you. So therefore, he told them, what am I supposed to do? Omar lohu my avi, what am I supposed to do for you? The Omer of Safra, ein kotvim shnei shtarot al sadeh achat. We can never allow the existence of two documents proving the same thing because the document also serves as a collection document for the guarantee. Dilma Torif, because maybe he'll go now to collect the money that was taken from him by the debtor who had a lien against his purchase, use it to collect against the seller, And then he'll come again a year later with the copy and collect again. Havi Katar delay. They really started hassling Rabbiah. I mean, this is crazy. There's got to be something to do. And we saw this before when the woman was being madrid in the Pesach of Rava. He had to come up with a way to just get her off his back. So Rabbiah came up with a way to get him off his back. He said to the Sofrim, okay, here's what to do. Write out a contract, okay? Then erase it. Then rewrite the contract on the erasure. Have the witnesses sign on the good part. Uh-huh. Now you will recall that Rav pointed out before, that's never a kosher contract. Why? Because even if it says that the witness is right and the shtar above was written on an erasure, you can't accept it. Because since we can't compare side by side the original surface with the first erasure, there'd be no way to prove that it was a second erasure. And therefore, we'll never accept a contract that says, and we signed on a shtar, which was written on a palimpsest. We won't accept that. So if that's the case, they will think that I've given them a copy. But in reality, it won't be a copy. Give that to them. No, give that to the owners. Give that to the owners. And I'll tell them, okay, fine, I'm giving in. Here, my Sofrim will be giving you a document. Give them that document as the copy. They won't know the difference.
Why couldn't it be for them to give to the Arabs?
Because the Arabs are smarter than that. They know that the Jews are dumb and will keep making viturim. So they figure they'll be able to get it off them eventually anyway. So therefore, they will think that I've done it for them. So zil k'tov lo ala mechak, ve'edav ala ni'ar, which will be possible. Tainet revaka b'minyumi to Abaya, that's a very dangerous thing to do. Because if you're going to write the contract originally, and then you're going to erase the contract, if we can forensically recreate the contract, we said before that if you can make it out, how do we know that this guy is going to do a spectroscopic analysis of the ink that was originally on the contract, and some guy one day is going to discover this was by Leonardo da Vinci? So what's to prevent that? V'dilma rishumo nikar, v'tana nimchak o niktashtesh, im rishumo nikar kosher. Says, by the way, you think I'm dumb? I told you to write out the shtar. I told you to write random jumble of letters. Aleph Beis, Gimel Dalet. Then erase that. Then write the real shtar. Aha! We've thought all of this up. So, Mika Amina Shtar Ma'alia. Aleph Beis Ba'ama Kamina. It's just a bunch. This is, of course, exactly what they do on internet templates, right? You want to download a template. So all you have is a bunch of nonsense that's written on, because otherwise you could use what was written in it. So they'll give you the template to use. But you'll have to completely erase what's there and use your own thing, right? Why do we need to know what he did?
Why are we talking so much about him putting a counterfeit document up? That's what Gordon's
done. Well, we haven't really spent a lot of time on it. But meanwhile, we've learned a very important thing, have we not? That you have to worry about palimpsests. Like this, I would think, what do I need to worry about? I'll just look at the upper layer of writing. Here the Gemara is bringing a raya that you must never assume that a shtar is going to be properly erased. So the court can't even risk issuing an erased document. That's a fantastic chiddush. I think it's brilliant. Harei shebav yamar avad shtar chovi. A guy who comes and he claims that he lost his contract. That is not what our Mishnah was talking about. We'll never give a new contract to a guy who claims that his contract went through a washing machine. Because then what's to prevent him from utilizing the copy? It's only as the Mishnah is saying that there's testimony to the fact that the document went through the washing machine. And here it is. So then, afa pisha omru edim, you can bring all the witnesses in the world to the original event. We did write and sign and hand him over that document, and it definitely existed, and you can reissue that. In kotvin lo et hashtar. We will never reissue a shtar in that fashion. When won't we do that? That is only where we're issuing a shtar that can be collected with. Because even if we would write in the shtar, this shtar is not usable for collecting from B'nai Chorin, because that's exactly what would have happened if the original item appeared and they now recreate the loan. We don't get back the lien, because the lien needs to have the document that was there at the time of the lien. We'd have to have somebody to be made that was the document of the lien, not that there was a document of the lien, right? Okay, so then you'll say, so what's so terrible? So he's not going to be able to use it to take it away from a buyer.
That's not the point. He'll be able to use it to collect from the borrower again. Because he'll say, you never paid me. I said, what do you mean, I never? Of course I paid you. We ripped up the shtar. Uh-huh. And what do you think about this? So there was still a loan. Therefore, how could, we can't give that to you. But, Bamedvarim Amurim, where is this true that we will never issue another document? Now, this piece of Gemara seems to completely undermine Abaye, as we're going to see. And we're going to have to figure out why this was not an option. This is only in a loan document. But if somebody needs a copy of an ownership document, now wait a minute, isn't that what they came to Abaye for? Then you can reissue it. How can you reissue it if they're going to be able to use it to recollect the guarantee on the value of the property? That's why Abaye says he refuses to reissue it. Says the Gemara, because if the Edim say that this event took place, we gave him over his shtar, and we know that it's true, and he is afraid that he's going to lose his proof, so there we will write him a copy. But the copy has to state, this is a copy that cannot be used for collection purposes of property guarantees against collection from a third party. And then nothing wrong could come of it. So Lechora, that certainly Abaye could have done for them. And it would seem on the surface that that's all that they needed. They just needed the original proof. They didn't need to be tarif. So he had a perfect etza. Okay, this we'll have to see as we continue the sugya. V'abal noten sachar, my time, v'yomakrav v'katav v'natan. Why don't we do it that way anymore? Because Shadur Rabbanana Ishaki Echdalo Leshayin. Kotvim Shtar Lelove Alpha Pishain Malve Imo and the Love Noten Sachar Pshita. Lotzricha, even in Aniska, we're both are beneficiaries. Kotvim Shtar Lelocher Alpha Pishain Lokef Imo Ve Alokef is Mishalim. Pshita, Lotzricha, Mamocher Sadeum Ne Ra'atam. Maybe the Mocher should be Mishalim. And Kotvim Shtar Eros Pshita. Lotzricha. That the chosin is a tzur b'mirabonan, in which case, if he comes from Lakewood, nechale lechamur lekruve, and the chosin shouldn't have to pay anything, kamash v'lam. Ein kotvim shtar risut v'kablanut, and the aris pays. Obviously, the aris pays. Isn't he a beneficiary? Lo tzricha b'vorah. Ein kotvim shtar berurin el amidat she... Wait, what is that? Hokatar gimo shtar ta'anata, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba omer ze borer lo echad, Vamarlo imlona tati mikan ad yom ploni ten lo shtaro. He gias van velonatan. What should he do? Rabbi Yossi omer yitain, Rabbi Yudah omer lo yitain. Vamaikam yif again. Rabbi Yossi sovres bachta kanya, Rabbi Yudah sovres bachta lo kanya. Om Rav Nachman omer rabba baravu omer rab. Alachak Rabbi Yossi that is machta is kanya. Ki oto the kami de Rabbi Yami. Vamarlo, well, what am I supposed to do? It certainly does seem unreasonable, but v'chimiacher shereb Yochanan malabdenu par mishona v'shnia halachik Rabbi Yossi, I can't go against Rabbi Yochanan, my Rabbi. Ani ma'ese halach alamaise though ain halachik Rabbi Yossi. Mishinim chak shtar chovo ma'amid alav edim ubalifnei beitin v'yosin lo kiyum ish ploni ben ploni nimchak shtaro b'yom ploni uploni. Uploni uploni beyond ploni uploni uploni eidav. Tan Rabban. Ezeu kiyumo. Well, it reads like this. Umot of tlata avina anu ploni uploni uploni. Hotzi ploni ben ploni shtar machuk l'kfanenu. Beyond ploni uploni uploni eidav. Now, if it also adds that, uskaknu le'idutan shaleidim, v'nimtzat edutan mechuvenet, then he can actually go straight ahead and be govev with the shtar, v'no tzarich any other raya with it. But in lav, it's only a lien document, not a loan document. And therefore, tzorek lovi ra'aya. Nikra pasul, nitkarea kasher. Nimchako ditashtesh, imrushumo nikra kasher. Hechidami nikra, hechidami nitkarea. Omer Rav Yudah, nikra is kera shel beitin. Nitkarea is kera sheino shel beitin. Hechidami kera shel beitin. Oh, now we get to the details. Om Rabbi Yehuda, well, first of all, Mokum Edim, Mokum Azman, Mokum HaToref, Abaya Omar, there's also the question of how it's torn, Sisiva Arab. Mehanu Arvoy, the Atul Pupadita, Davika Anse Aratad Incho, Atu Marvate, Lekami, the Abaya Omar, Lichze Marshtore, Velichtov on Marshtore Achrina Ale. That way, imitnis chad, naktin chad biadan. Omar lo, I can't do that. Maya avid lechu. Diom Rav Safra, ein kotvim shnei shtarot al sade achad. Diom a torif, vare ve torif. Havi katar delay. Omar lo, le Safra, you know what, just go and give them a phony document. And zil ktuov lehu, ala mechak. Ve idav ala niyar. We're over there, we said there's no way to be machshir shtar like that. And that will be puzzle. No, they'll leave me alone. But how can you do that? You couldn't have thought that I meant to write a shtar ma'alya and then erase the shtar ma'alya. I'm talking about writing aleph beit be'alma ka'amina. Toner rabbanan harei sheba v'yamar avad shtar chovi. So alfa pisha amru edim anu katavnu v'chatamnu v'natamnu lo. Which you could use to recollect. Avishtari mekachu memka, which only rises as to your ownership, you can write a shtar that stipulates that it's not usable for collection. So kotvim chutz min ha'achrayut shebo. But to say chutz min ashibud in a loan doesn't help you, because you could still collect the loan.